you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Ralph Sutton, the SDR Show. This week we have the lead singer of Styx. His name is Lawrence Gowen. He actually replaced Dennis DeYoung, and he's been in the band like, I don't know, 20 years or something like that. Really cool dude. We get into it deep with him. Just a fun guy. Remember, we do the show every single Wednesday and Saturday. Wednesdays are usually live in studio. Saturdays usually a Zoom. Jay is usually on Wednesdays. Saturdays an ever-changing lineup of co-hosts usually, but that could mix up at any given time. What we want you to do is share the show. Get us out there with your friends, your family, your loved ones, your not-so-loved ones. Maybe you have a neighbor that's a big Styx fan, and you could have heard this 5 days ago at gasdigitalnetwork.com. If you use the code SDR, you get 20% off. But really, all I care about is get the show out there. Tell everybody, check out the SDR show. And here it is right now, the Styx episode of it.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone fuck the hoe. It's beat, I beat. It's hookers and blow. It's art, it's art. You need to know. The SDR Show. Let's go.
It is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. I am Ralph Sutton. Back with me once again, it is James Madden. Shannon is doing the production work. And let me say this before we introduce our guest. He said something very important before we went on air, which was, hey, look, I'm in a hotel room. I made my bed because it's embarrassing to be on camera without your bed made. And I'm going to say this to you, sir. Mm-hmm. I had a big argument with James about it months ago because he'd be on camera with his bed unmade. And I'm like, show some goddamn respect for the guests.
First of all, let's just discuss how crazy the world is. Months ago was 2 years ago, Ralph. This was
whatever.
2 years ago.
Months.
We've been doing this. Look at this. Can you see it? The bed's pretty much made.
Oh, well,
I just got new pillows. I didn't have time to put on the thing. Look at me,
not even
classy.
Close to being made. Let's introduce this guy correctly, okay? First of all, not only a solo artist for years before joining some little-known band called Styx, hilariously sometimes referred to as the new guy in the band, although he's been there for 23 fucking years, quite a long goddamn time. You can follow him on G-O-W-A-N, going on the Instagrams or Styx the band. We'll talk about the new tour. We'll talk about the album that came out last year that fucking get to number one. I don't know the last time that a Styx album went to number one, but let's do it right now. It is Lawrence Gowen. How are you, sir?
I'm very well. And if you want to pronounce it Gowen, it's okay with
Gowen, I'm sorry. You know what's funny? I wrote Gowen and then I said Gowen because of the Gowanus in Brooklyn. I keep saying Gowen and it's Gowen. I am sorry.
No, it's okay, because if you're in Quebec in Canada, the Francophone, the French people pronounce it Gowen. The Montreal Expos t-shirt. You don't see that every day. You don't
in this house. I don't make the bed, but I wear Expos swag all the time. That's how I balance it out.
No, the Francophone pronunciation is Gowen.
And is it weird that you're still sometimes referred to, even though there's Will, who was like a production guy, now is now in the band. You are in the band 23 years. Yeah. It is weird that people do refer to you sometimes as the newer guy in the band. That's got to be weird.
Well, no, in fact, I like when the word new is attached to my name for anything. In this day and age, I'm at peace with it, very much so. So please call me the new guy.
And I will say this, that I'm the one that does a lot of the research, although apparently not on how to pronounce your fucking name. But I was going to be very upset if I didn't see this, because in every interview I saw of you, sans one, you wore a cool sports jacket or a cool suit jacket, whatever you call it. And I was hoping to get one. Is that a passion of yours, that you love jackets, or what?
It's how can I put it? You know, I'm trying to look as camera ready as I possibly can in this new Zoom reality in which we are living. And it's funny, because 2 years ago, I didn't know what a Zoom call was. And now I make them all the time. So I kind of try to look somewhat presentable and as if I have a pair of shoulders that I obviously don't have if I take this.
Well, I'm wearing a t-shirt, right? And I got a stupid Japanese screen behind me, but you at least, it makes you come off like the dignified rock star that you are. Like, you're a little more classy than James. I mean, James wearing a stupid World Series of Poker hat, for God's sake.
I look, you know, spectacular.
Honestly, it's just honest for saying that, Ralph. I'm going to go put a pair of pants on just to class.
There it is, Lawrence. Yeah.
By the way, is that what I have to ask this? And it's, I hate when I refer to backgrounds, but it just looks like a really cool leather satchel over your left shoulder. Is that some sort of like dop kit go bag? What's going on over there?
That's my bag. And it carries my computer and also my.
Oh, is it leather or just looks leather from here?
My working papers. I think it's leather. My working papers to be in the United States legally. So that when I'm stopped on the street and they say, "What the hell are you doing here?"
Let me whip out my cool stylish leather bag and I'm going to show you.
That's all you got to do. Let me whip out my cool stylish bag. I'll put on a sports jacket and present myself in a dignified manner.
I love it. Well, you're doing a bang up job. So the funny thing is, as you just said yourself, a few years ago, two years ago and change, most people didn't even know what a Zoom call was or what any of that was at all, you know, but to start with, hilariously, and I guess on purpose, the tour, which is Styx, REO Speedwagon, Loverboy, live and unzoomed tour, which is obviously a nod to what's going on in the world. But what I like also, and I could be wrong because I fuck up a lot, as you probably have already noticed, Loverboy's on the bill. You and Loverboy, 100 years ago in your solo career, were both signed by the same dude.
I love that you brought that up, Ralph. That's great. Yes, there's a man in Canada named Jeff Burns, who was responsible for signing Loverboy, myself. He was part of the team that brought on Celine Dion and several other acts that are worldwide known. And Jeff has never received really the full accolades that he deserves. But yes, having Loverboy on this tour, we actually meet exactly. We're at the quota. The Canadian quota for an American summer tour, so I'm very glad that we
that's
were
pretty cool though. And so when you went going back, I don't know what year that was. I guess early '80s. When did you guys? Okay,
Loverboy were signed, I think, in 1980, and I was signed in 1981. Yeah, and so I would hear a lot of the songs that they play in their set. I heard them as demos in the A&R guy's office, and he'd be like, "What do you think of this song?" And I'd be like, yeah, it sounds like a smash.
Wow, that's cool. Did you stay friends all the years, or are you just rekindling friendships now?
No, we've been.
You've toured a few times with Styx over there, but I think about, did you like stay friends? You know what I mean?
Oh, with Styx or with
the Loverboy guy.
Yeah, we've been pals ever since. Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
It's legally mandated in Canada that you have to at least we'll put on some sort of semblance of friendship with your fellow
and with fellow Canadians. And then, so the thing I give you guys credit for, because look, we're all, I'm 52. You're a little older than me, right? Not that much. But when you're bringing in new technology like Zoom and whatnot, you know, there's the joke that the older people are just not going to figure it out, but Styx figured it out, because not only did you do that great, what was it, Too Much Time on My Hands video that was through Zoom, but a lot of the album that we just touched on in the beginning of this Crash of the Crown was recorded through not Zoom, but like, I know a friend of mine was working on this too, like that a high end Zoom basically, so that there's no delay and nothing like that. So kudos for the band, a bunch of old geezers like me that are doing Zoom videos and a lot of Zoom concerts and shit. But then to record the album through Zoom is pretty wild as well. Not Zoom, whatever it was called.
I'll tell you what it was called. There are so many quick technological advances happened at the beginning of COVID that we began to embrace, and they were quickly kind of improved upon because the necessity was there. So when we first, you know, when we first went in, much like everyone else on the planet, when it was first announced that, oh, we're going to have to do this lockdown thing for a couple of weeks, we figured, oh, that's fine. Great, we're 2 weeks off. Then when it got into like 2 months and then 3 months, we decided, we went, okay, so this could be indefinite. We better go and listen to where we were on that album on Crash of the Crown when we stopped. And when we listened to it, we felt like, oh no, these songs are really, you can relate lyrically to a lot of what we're going through and everyone's going through. which was coincidental and kind of a happy circumstance to find ourselves. But then we said, how are we going to finish this record? I wasn't even allowed to come across the border. I was in Toronto at that point. And we heard from a couple of our sound engineer people that there was an app called Audio Movers. This is where you could be in one studio in the world, listening through the monitors in that studio, and then be connected to a studio on the other side of the world. And they're listening in real time through their monitors. So
yeah, no delay whatsoever, unlike Zoom, whatsoever. Like perfect quality, right?
No delay. There might be nanoseconds of delay, but I mean, and undetectable. And as you and I, as the four of us are having this chat here, it became so second nature while we started to make the record this way that I began, you really lost the sense of there being any distance between us at all, to the point where at one point I'm in the studio, our engineer is sitting like 10 feet away from me. And I'm talking to him on the screen like this. I said, hey, you know, Russ, could you turn up the, and he goes, I'm sitting right here. I'm like, oh yeah, right. And it became that second nature. And quite honestly, from the keyboard player's perspective, from my standpoint, one of the great benefits that helped the record from my estimation is that I was able to use all these vintage instruments that I've kept for years from the 70s, like a Mellotron, like 1971 Mellotron and Mini Moog and an Oberheim and these old, you know, 50s B3 and 1920s Steinway piano. These are things that I wouldn't dare move like 5 inches, right. You know, so they got to stay locked in place in our studio. And I was able to use them on this record, and I'm really pleased with how that it really worked out to be a bonus.
Now, what's interesting about it also, by the way, which I'm sure you're well aware of this, because I'm sure it's come up in interviews, but you know, as you said, the album started to be written before the pandemic in 2019. Yes. And it's called Crash of the Crown. The pandemic hits. Most people probably know this by now, that the term Corona means crown. So it certainly sounds like it was written for the pandemic, and there's songs on there that look like, oh, they wrote this because of what was happening. No. But that's not the case, which was pretty wild.
Well, congratulations on pointing out the fact that yes, crown does mean corona is Spanish for crown. So that's you have raised the level of the intellectual level of this show so quickly, Ralph, from the beginning. Well, you started off with like really low.
Yeah, I'm calling you Johnny Goings and whatever, you know, so screwing up everything.
You're raising the tone. It's fantastic. So yeah, the Crash of the Crown, even lyrically, as I say, a lot of it was incredibly, I mean, there's a song on the album called Save Us From Ourselves.
Right, I'm saying, like, there are songs on there, they're like, oh, of course, they wrote this.
And they weren't.
Another Farewell is just like an interlude, whatever. It just sounds like this was written on purpose. You know?
I can tell you that only two of the songs were written post-pandemic, and I wasn't involved in the writing of the Our Wonderful Lives, and what was the other one? I think To Those, which right. I get to sing lead on that one, but those two songs are written post-pandemic. You can totally read into they were intentionally written under the circumstances of the, but the rest of the record, like Fight of Our Lives, as I mentioned, you know, Hold Back the Darkness, yeah. All of these themes came up, coming out the other side, all these themes came up prior to the pandemic. I think we kind of, almost instinctively, I suppose, had some, I wouldn't say, not obviously a premonition of a pandemic, but a premonition that things were unraveling at a rather rapid pace prior to the pandemic. In many ways, you can interpret that. And I think we were kind of addressing that. And of course, it just slid forward into the 2020 reality that we all went through.
James, you look like you're going to...
Yeah, has any conspiracy theory people come after you? Like, hey, man, Styx had some inside information. Yeah. Is Styx secret code for China's government? Like, has any of this nonsense come out?
It's also weird that one of the songs is called Bill Gates is putting microchips in the vaccine is the title of one of the songs. That's weird.
Yeah.
What about the bonus track? Vaccines make you sterile.
Well, we're blaming it on the vaccines.
Anyway, so let me ask you this. So you're the first album that you've been in the band, it was 23 years, but the first album that you were involved with the like writing and stuff. It was Cyclorama 2003, right? Yeah. And then a couple of years later, I think before the name of the TV show, I could be wrong, was Big Bang Theory. I don't know which was first, but I think
you're extremely accurate. Yes, our album Big Bang Theory came out at least a couple of years before the television show ripped us off. Right. After we went ripped off at Einstein, they decided, they must be bastards.
Yeah. But then here's the weird thing. Then you take a 13-year break, right, between records to come out with The Mission in 2017, right?
Correct.
Some would say during that 13-year break, James, they may have had too much time on their hands.
Oh, God.
Oh, we're going to do this game again? Are we going to do this?
Stop it. Oh, God, Dad.
God, are you saying that they had to sail away? Come on. Let's go. So are we going to do this? Let's see that.
I didn't see that coming at all. Right in the kisser.
The question is,
stop going renegade on this shit, Ralph. Two to one.
That was good. I like that one. But there's one more of those, babe, and I'm leaving.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So now the question would be this. How does one, I know, look, you could say, oh, we just got back into it, blah, blah, blah. But you take that long of a break.
Yeah,
I know. Not as a break as a band, because obviously the band was touring and you know, there was DVDs and stuff, live shows. But I mean, to say, okay, we are going to now write new music. That can't be that easy to start getting into that mindset again. I have to imagine that was difficult.
Well, okay. First of all, the reason for the break was obviously we're lazy. The reality is this. We had tons of new ideas and things would come up in sound checks all the time. And what basically happened is, you know, it's amazing how quickly we forget these things when things begin to go right again. The music industry itself was in such disarray between, let's say, from the day that Napster came out until basically around 2014, but particularly the years between 2005 and 2014. Let's call it those 9 years. The major labels had lost their incredible hold on what the music industry was able to reveal to people over that time, and they really had to retool and rethink their whole stature and their whole method of doing things. For example, I remember that some of my master tapes, actually the ones that were from Ringo that we had recorded in Ringo Starr's home in Tintners Park, first name drop.
Well, that's your first record. We're going to get into that, but you beat me to the punch. I wanted to sound like I knew what I was talking about, but you're going to continue. I'm sorry, Rob.
I'm sorry I screwed that up on you. But I got a call around 2009 that they found those master tapes and I could come and pick them up. And when I went there, you know, I was signed to Columbia Records in Toronto in the 1981, as we call it. They owned a gigantic stretch of real estate like by downtown Toronto, where they had a full factory, full A&R, like just huge, you know. For example, like next door to them was like Wrigley's gum. Do they have that in the States?
Wrigley.
Yeah, like monster place. And when I went to pick up my tapes in 2009, they were, the entire Sony Records was on the third floor of a building not far from where they were before, but the entire record company had pared down to this lean little, you know, group of people that were basically salvaging what was left of what was once these major. And I've imagined, okay, so as this is coming back together, the music industry will right itself. During that period, it was, we were aware, you know, the guys in Styx are pretty smart. We were aware that making new music without having a proper method of presenting it to people and getting it into people's homes was a bit of a lost time. We could spend more time on the road connecting with people in real life and having the live experience
and making more money probably too.
And that too. Yeah, there's no money if it's been made in that part. But that wasn't really that was not the driving reason. It really came down to where the music industry was. But by around 2013, 2014, Universal Records, who owned the Styx catalog, got interested in the band again and wanted to make another record. That kind of reawakened the hunger to get in the studio and make it. Also, the vinyl explosion. I remember, I would go into vinyl record shops, between say 2000 and 2014. And they were kind of like hipster places where everybody had, thick rimmed glasses on, but then I started to notice, wow, it's all ages are coming into these vinyl record stores, and people have rediscovered the joy of that art form of that 40-minute arbitrarily piece of music that you turn your phone off and, get off your computer and listen to the thing and flip it over. All of that tactile experience had come back into the mainstream, so to speak. And in addition to that, you mentioned him before, the actual new guy in the band, Willie Vankovich, who'd worked with Tommy Shaw on a solo record that Tommy did in 2010. He had great production chops, great writing chops, and great, history in music. I can list all the bands that he played with and worked with. That kind of gave us an outsider at that point, giving us the incentive to want to be creative and put something together as an album. Mm-hmm. And so that's how we,
the mission came about. And then that reignited you guys, who then only, it would have been 2 years later. Yeah. Had this happened, Crash Crowd would have came out in 2019. So it reignited the desire to start putting out albums again.
Exactly what happened. When the mission came out, we decided let's not even play anything from it at first until the audiences start to demand, hey, how come you're not playing anything from your new record? So we would put in little bits and we would segue them with the classic material. So it became where you couldn't really distinguish between, is that something before Equinox that I never heard? There was that kind of, because sonically we made the whole record analog. Mm-hmm. We all went to analog tape. We pretended it was 1979. We didn't have our phones on and all that. We're all in the same room. And we made that record that way. And it sounds that way. And
is that why on Crash to the Crown, there's a lot of what I would call like interlude music, like things that you guys can see, this would work well into a Big Styx song?
Absolutely. You bring up one particular part that I am really happy with is I have this little piece of music called Lost at Sea.
Right.
And it was actually, think about this for a second. I think it was actually part of the song Monster at first. I kind of stuck it in there. And then we realized, no, it's only 39 seconds long, but it segues beautifully into Coming Out the Other Side. And so those little segues are useful in a live show because I do Lost at Sea in our current tour, just Chuck and I on stage. Chuck Bonazzo and I do it as a duet. Mm-hmm. And it streams straight into Come Sail Away. So there are ways of kind of introducing our new material to where it's connected in some tertiary way to the legacy material, let's call it that, that everyone knows and loves and are coming to hear. And that's been a more palatable way of us introducing new things.
And it's also interesting in listening to the new album. I would say the title track to me, at least on the first couple, I listened through it a couple times, is the most Styx-ish, if that's a word, if I was ever to create a word. But it's got to be tricky to write a new Styx record where you're not trying to just pay service to fans and because you know what they want. I know your background, you tend to gravitate more towards the progressive rock stuff, and that's where your heart is. But it's just that balancing act of nothing too far off the mainstream, but yet still feels like Styx, but something that you guys are going to be excited to play. It's got to be a tricky balancing act.
That's a very good point. The balancing act that has to come in is, does it resonate with the past in some way? Does it resonate with who we are today? So that's two criteria. Then, from my little camera angle, I'm trying to push anything that's got the progressive side of it. The song doesn't repeat choruses over and over instead, but instead it morphs and kind of it evolves into something that you're not expecting in the next section. And then you've got, the great thing is you've got the pop rock sensibility of Styx that really were, you know, and I this is what I really say was the strength of the band in the past, was that they were able to balance the lofty notions and otherworldly or larger than life feeling of progressive rock, but make it very palatable to people who weren't music snobs, let's call it right. that. And make it that people could understand it, particularly lyrically. They had a great knack for coming up with themes that everyone could relate to and somehow put themselves into the picture.
I have a very stupid question, but I mean, right. we've already proven.
I got a ton of stupid answers.
Yeah, we've been proven already that I'm not that smart of a person.
But you've done great so far, Ralph. You have so much stock because of you knew the Corona.
I got a couple of things. I got more heavy hitters, but this is a weird question. Obviously, you do a lot of the singing. Obviously, yep. You're not the only singer in the band, right? The question right. is, when you're writing songs, so you do collectively write, is it, I wrote this, so I get to sing it, or this song will sound better in your register? Do we duke it out old style? How do we decide who sings what?
Do we have an 8-round match?
Obviously not of the old songs, that's easy. You know, if Tommy sang the song, Tommy will still sing the song. Right, fine. That's easy. I'm talking about going forward, new album, new music. How do we figure that out?
First of all, before I answer that, I'm going to agree with Jamie. You know, yeah, you're right. Ralph has really raised the bar on this.
Do you duke it out, Lawrence? That's the greatest question ever. I hope you paper, rock, scissors. That would be the best. Yeah. I really think my range is good for this. All right, 2 out of 3. Let's go.
You're going to Rochambeau.
Rochambeau is also crown in the French.
We want to duke it out. You know,
I would pay to see it, sir.
Our punches are so lame at this age. It's like they're like tickles, you know, when they hit you. Know, it's like, hey, you.
So whoever laughs the most gets to sing it from the tickle.
You know what's funny? Actually, it's weird in Styx. It's not necessarily the person that wrote it sings it. It comes down to which is the best voice to convey this. For example, Tommy and Will had this riff at the beginning of Crash of the Crowns. It's like down, 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 down. Not a very piano type of riff, mm-hmm. a very guitarish riff. And I liked that as an opening, but it needed a melody that wasn't obvious with that. So a melody that kind of grew out of it. And I was picturing almost like a Bowie-esque type of melody on top of that riff. Well, the most Bowie-esque sounding voice in the band is JY. So although I came up with that melody and those lyrics on the front of the song, JY is the lead vocalist on that. The middle of the song, Tommy and I kind of hacked together the two of us, and then Will came in with some of the other themes that are in the record, if my recollection is correct. And Tommy is really the lead on that. I'm kind of harmonizing with him, but under the radar. And then the last part of the song, Tommy and Will wrote that part. That's entirely sung by myself. So I sing most on the parts I didn't write and the least on the parts that I did. So I love that is a great way of kind of passing it around the room as to who sounds best on this song.
And had you done that ever, like you tried, you recorded a song and you're like, you know what? It's better if Tommy sings this. You've done that with songs. That's wild.
It's amazing. It's amazing how magnanimous the guys are about that. You know, Tommy sang originally, I think he sang to those. Yeah. And then when we went to record it and we were on a call like this, he just suddenly went, I think the tone of your voice might work better on this.
Wow, that's nice. That's cool.
I went at it and he was like, I want it to be this way, you know? Mm-hmm. Whereas I thought, for example, on Common Ground, I thought, you know, I think I can do the lead, you know, on this one. And then I heard him sing it and realized, no, that's he carries this, his character and his whole take on it carries it perfectly, you know, and I won't even come in until the end of the song. So it really is passed around that way.
In a slightly different scenario on this show, if anyone disagrees with me, they're fired immediately. So that's kind of similar, I guess. I don't know how to say that. Okay. So, all right, before we go any further, a longtime sponsor of the show, you know them as very simply Yo Kratom, home of the $60 kilo. High quality curated Kratom direct to you. Their prices haven't changed. inflation through the roof, although lately maybe a little bit better. I don't know. Gas prices coming down a little bit. But anytime you go to Yo Kratom, it's going to be $60. $60 a kilo. And you could find custom blends, specific strains, whatever you want, delivered direct to your door at YoKratom.com. Plus, as Big J always says, it's cool to just buy it by the kilo. Shannon's favorite one, it's the train wreck. You can find that at YoKratom.com or just try a bunch of them. No longer worrying. How long has this been sitting at the bodega, at the gas station? Get that mystery out of it. Direct to you from YoKratom.com. It's the Kratom you want. It's the Kratom you need. And it's a Kratom at $60 a kilo. It's YoKratom.com. All right, let's get back into it. Now, we'll go back to young Lawrence in Canada in the early 80s. New York Americans may not know this, but you had not only successful string of records under your last name, but the wild thing is you are, and I could be, as we've said a few times, fucking this up, but somehow you're seeing Peter Gabriel, and I could be wrong on this, you're like, hey, his band would sound cool if they played my music with me. Yep. And then fast forward, not only are they doing it, but you're recording in Ringo Starr's home. Is that all right?
I'm going to tell you three crazy ass coincidences that have happened. Are they coincidences or are there the gods of rock have smiled upon me for whatever reason a few times? One is that the first time I saw Peter Gabriel in Toronto, as a solo artist, he was back then doing this thing where he would come through the crowd with the band. Mm-hmm. And that would be the opening of the show. And Tony Levin went by me and I actually kind of, they had these flashlight things and they were kind of going through the crowd. He came by me and I got to put my arm around him and went, Tony, we got to make a record together someday. And of course, there's no memory of
that's
that.
But that's fucking hilarious.
But 3 years later, I'm at my next Peter Gabriel show in Toronto, and I had written the songs that wound up on my album. It was my second album. It was called Strange Animal. And the fellow that was doing the sound for them, live sound, he wound up being the producer of the record. But at that show, I actually got this moment of depression where they were about halfway through the show. It was so killer. And I had these new songs, and I realized, I don't know. And I've got great musicians in my life, but not the right guys to play these songs. There's a way that, you know, it's 1980, would be 84 at that point, 83 at that point, and everything had kind of shifted. And I thought, I need guys that look at the songs the way these guys do, the way Jerry Marotta and Tony Levin look at the Gabriel material and interpret it that way. So our legendary A&R guy we referred to, Jeff Burns, he sends the demo, my demo, to David Tickle, who was the producer and the live sound man. But 3 months later, I get a call from a car, and a car phone in 83 was pretty rare. So it's about November or so. And he says, listening to your demo here in England, I'm doing sound on Peter Gabriel's tour, and I've got Tony Levin and Jerry Marotta here in the car. We're really liking your demo. Would you like to come and make a record with those guys here? And then the cherry on top, which made me think, you know, who the hell is this calling? That was that, listen, I don't want to come back to Canada. I want to make the record here in England when this tour ends. And I've got Ringo Starr's home studio, Tittenhurst Park. And I recognize the name right away because it's where John Lennon made Imagine. It was where John Lennon lived prior to Ringo, John.
So basically hacks, you're saying. I got it. Okay, continue.
A bunch of hacks. Not going to last.
Bush leader.
Yeah, exactly. So I couldn't believe it, you know, but I said, yeah, sure. And then a couple of months after that, it was actually February the 7th, 1984. I went to the Tittenhurst Park and Ringo was at the door.
Wow. Shook
my hand and said, best of luck with your record. And the kitchen is, you know, it was connected to the studio. It's literally as far away as that hotel room door there. So he would hear me going through these demos and going through playing the songs. And I would often be wondering, God, you know, this guy, he's hearing me, you know, a criminal mind is all, you know, and he must be, what the hell is he thinking in there? Because normally he'd hear somebody come into the studio and go, I've got a new song. Go say, hey, Jude. So thinking, this is really, I've really got to put aside any sort of self-consciousness.
Right, of course.
Go through it. Anyway, that happened. The record was a triple platinum record in Canada. It's a sad story as to what happened with Columbia Records and the release of that album in the United States. I don't want to go into that. Oh, well, we can if you want, but it'll be boring as hell. And then the second time a crazy coincidence like that happened in my life was in 1997. So we go well ahead in the, on the clock. I'm trying to dovetail the solo years here. And I was asked to open the show for Styx at right. the New Montreal Forum. And the promoter, a guy named Donald K. Donald, said, I hadn't opened for anybody in Canada in 14 years. And he said, I want you to open this show because you headlined the old Montreal Forum. You're at a point in your career where you probably will not headline the new Montreal Forum, but as an opener, you'll do great. And I thought, is my ego soft? So I said, yes, I want to do it, but I have to do it solo piano. I'm touring all this year, 1997, as a solo, just one man act. And he said, I want you to do that. So I did. And our manager, Charlie Brusco, came up to see the show. Basically, the way he tells it was to watch a lamb to the slaughter. And it went, anyway, I didn't get slaughtered. It went really well. And they remembered me. But during the Styx show, I should get to this point.
Oh, so I learned a lot of emails.
I watched the, I know, sorry about that. I wish I knew how to shut off that ding, ding, ding. I'm watching Styx show. It's the first time I'd ever seen them live. And I was really impressed with them. I didn't know they were that strong a force live. And I said to the people that were with me as a joke, but similar to the Gabriel thing where I thought I need musicians like that. As a joke, I turned to the person beside me and I said, I would never be in a band, but if I was in a band, I feel like I would fit into this band. And that's a very odd thing to say at a concert for any musician to say that. But it just came out of my mouth. And 2 years later, phone rang and it was them.
And they saw that show. Tommy said, wow, that guy would fit in with us. And that's kind of how that came about, right?
That and some extra prodding he got from the because the manager called the promoter, John L.K. Donald spoke to Charlie Brusco. Tommy also spoke to the lady that happened to be running his website, Kim Ouellette. She's in Montreal, called her and said, what do you think about this guy? And she said, I think he'd be the right guy.
So that leads me to the question I really want to ask you. So now you have a successful solo career. You're deciding to basically not give it up, but you're obviously going to be known now as someone in Styx, regardless of how successful your solo career is, right? So that's number one. That had to be not an easy decision to make. But number two, when you're coming into this, did you look at these songs that you knew you were going to sing, the Dennis songs, obviously you're going to sing, do I try and sing them as faithfully as possible? Am I going to put my own little spin on them to identify that it's me? Or do I want to try and be as respectful to the source material? You know, those are all questions as an artist that you are, that you had those two things you had to struggle with, I have to imagine.
You're totally on the money. Exactly. It's funny. Like, who the hell wouldn't join Styx if they were asked, right? But I did have to take a couple of hours to consider everything that you just mentioned there. That entire list went through my head. Really,
we're
going
to have to.
Goddamn emails. Stop emailing me.
We're going to have to.
Mr. Roboto trying to get that.
How hilarious is it? I was giving him props. I was giving you props for being tech savvy at the top of this interview.
I don't know how to shut off the notifications. I'm sorry. The other thing is, it's not that I have friends. It's just companies that have profiled me and are sending me their latest jackets. I did have to realize that, you know, I was really happy with my career going back and forth from Victoria, BC to St. John's, Newfoundland. I was happy with that. I'd gone to play in England a lot in those two intervening years. I opened for the Stranglers on a whole national tour there. I'm born in Scotland, so I can work in the UK. And, you know, started to build. I was invited to come and play at Princess Diana's, the opening of her memorial at Althorpe, where I played with the London Symphony, or BBC or National, same thing. An original piece called Healing Waters that originally her family, you know, really loved that song and wanted to play it at her memorial. And so things were going great. But the thing that had eluded me is what we were just referring to. I didn't have a U.S. connection to the U.S. audience. I toured in 85. I got to tour with Tears of Fears and opened all the shows for them in the U.S. Got in two cities, Pittsburgh and Cleveland. I got into the top 20 just on import alone.
I'm sure when that happened, you both thought you were going to rule the world.
Look at this guy. He's back. He's back, baby.
Let it all out.
He's trying. Goddammit. He's trying.
These are the stories we can do without. Come on. I'm talking to you, Ralph and Jamie. And Shannon.
We're here. Lawrence, can I ask you something? I want to go back for a second. So,
yeah, go ahead, Jamie.
And I might go into conspiracy zone, which I usually don't.
Please do. Oh, please do. I love it there.
So in 84, right, you were going to put out the album. They didn't put it. Columbia didn't put it out in the U.S., right? Your solo album.
Right. Here's
the crazy thing.
Okay.
They did the same thing to Leonard Cohen in 1984, another Canadian royalty. What the what's going on with Columbia not letting Canadians put their albums in goddamn U.S.? I'm an honorary Canadian. We don't have to get into it. It's one of the reasons I'm wearing this to salute you. This hurts. 84, and that was the album that he put out, Hallelujah, a classic. So two classics they don't bring to America. What the fuck's going on, Columbia?
Yeah, it was... Well, it was obviously a conspiracy. Yeah, the Illuminati were definitely involved. There's no question about it. I mean, who the hell doesn't know that? You can Google it. It's right on the internet.
Clive Davis, you know, remember the Illuminati.
If you fold the Canadian dollar in a certain way, it just shows you that, you know, they don't like America. I don't know, something like that.
That's so crazy.
It is pretty wild. That's pretty wild. Maybe they didn't
bring anyone from Canada down in 84. They just took a break. They're like, well,
I have my own little theory about that.
Please.
I'm gonna let it out right now. My theory is that during the 80s, if you remember, Columbia Records wound up becoming Sony Records. And there was, this is my own, just a theory, that's all it is. But in the sale of those records, of that record company, that American institution of Columbia Records, CBS, becoming Sony, I think that any sort of outsiders, so whatever other artists were around other than the UK, any other outsiders were kind of relegated to a marginal position until after they became Sony, and then it became okay again to kind of let the other outsiders.
Wow.
That's my little theory. I'm going to stick to it because it exonerates me of any sort of culpability, and maybe my music was just un-American at the time. Perhaps there's that. But there's, you know, you never know what's moving behind the scenes in the music industry, in the world in general, can often have such a profound impact. And I look at it now philosophically and think, had I been released in the United States and had I had a solo career, we'd be having a completely different conversation.
Right.
And I wouldn't be in sticks. So I've enjoyed my musical life.
Also, wasn't another Canadian royalty on one of your records? Alex from Rush was in one of your...
Alex Lifeson from Rush played on my fourth album, Lost Brotherhood. He was on the entire record. And I was managed by the same people that managed Rush. Ray Daniels was my manager for 14 years and prior to me joining Styx. And so we were in close enough association that I was able to get Alex to come and play on that album.
That's cool. So now let me ask you this. You also still do solo shows, right?
I just did four of them. Right. We took a break on this tour. We like to take, we do 3 weeks solid, and then we usually take a week off. In that week off, I did a cross Canada tour of solo shows. I did Calgary, Regina, Winnipeg, and just outside Toronto. And I did those on the break, and I love doing those. Believe me, they're so I get to revisit all that material that still gets played on the radio and is still in the top 100 of all time Canadian classics, up there with Hallelujah by Leonard Cohen.
It's pretty wild. So now the question is this: when you do solo shows, you don't do any sticks.
I do not.
But when you are in sticks, Criminal Mind creeps into the set every once in a while. So do you feel like you're playing favorites a little bit there?
To be fair, no, you just reminded me of something. Sorry. Yes, in my solo show, there's a solo piano piece that I have on the mission called Key Dive, K-H-E-D-I-V-E, which was the name of the ship that my dad served on in the Second World War in the Royal Navy. Mm-hmm. And I love that's on the Styx album, The Mission. I do play that in my solo shows.
Okay. All right. So one for one then. Okay.
One for one. It's even. Yeah,
all right.
Let's be fair.
Now, we're going to have to ask the first end, but then this is just one last weird question, right? And then we're going to do the first. So we amazingly are almost out of time with you. So I am sure, going back 23 years, you had no idea you'd still be in the band today, right? So I would have to imagine.
I never look further ahead than the next right. 6 months or the right. next
exactly.
6 weeks.
I would imagine. So my question is, and this is you may not be able to answer or nor want to answer, but why not? I have you here. I'm going to ask you, did you make a deal with the band that you regretted? Do you get to renegotiate every few years? Or is the deal you made the deal you made, or you can't talk about it?
They're very good to me.
Okay, that's fair enough. Fair enough. Because I would wonder, you know, I know stories like of certain bands. I don't want to bring them up specifically, yeah. where guys have left the band, they come back, and now they're just hired guns. They don't get a piece. They're just the deal is the deal now. Come back and do that, or don't come back. So, I mean, 23 years ago, they're sticks. You in America, I just wonder, but that's nice to know that they're good to you. That's nice.
Look at how well he's dressed in that leather bag. The man's getting taken care of, Ralph. Look at how nice he makes his bed. This man's a classy man. He's dressed like a fixer. He's Michael Clayton. He's taken care of.
That's true. I like that. And also, I read this too, which I always wonder, but I liked your answer to this, which was when you have such a fucking history, the band, I don't even know how many albums they have at this point, but let's say it's near 20, something like that, right?
Yeah.
To put a playlist together is almost impossible. I like that you have stepped away, and it's like, I think it's the road manager or someone that puts the list together. He's like, let's not even fucking think about this. We're not involved. That's the right way to do it.
That's right. I actually like being surprised walking on stage. I've got the whole, the canon of songs ready to go, but I like being surprised just before the show and finding out what we actually are going to play on that show. It adds a little extra edge to it. And getting into some arbitrary disagreement over what songs we're going to play is a really dumb way to break up a band.
That's true. Well, I mean, didn't that technically what happened 25 years prior, whatever that is, had something to do with it?
I know nothing about that.
The best. This guy's the best.
Good answer. You should run for a politician in Canada or something. Provinces, right? That's what they're called. Okay,
sure.
They're the provinces. That's another language for crown, just so you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a lot of synonyms for crown is what I'm learning. All right, we got to do the first, Shannon.
The first time ever I saw
The name of the show is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. We've asked every guest this question since we started. Your first experience with all three. We start with rock and roll, and we wonder the first concert you went to, but we mean this. We mean one you went to on your own volition.
Yep.
And hopefully something we're going to know, not some dumb local Canadian band that I don't know.
Okay. It's a Canadian band. You can decide whether they're dumb or not. But no, the very first concert that I paid money to go and see, $5.50, was the Guess Who.
Oh, that's a good one. I like that.
And I'll tell you, their show they were so good that what blew my mind at that show, I was like 14, 15, was that they sounded as good as their records, but maybe a little bit better. Like it was as good as the, and so they became kind of that was the bar to me of every band I've seen. Now, the band I nearly saw first, I love telling this story. This was that in 1966, the kids that lived next door to me who weren't really fans, Beatle fans, they had a relative that worked for the Toronto newspaper and had free tickets to see the Beatles, 1966. And they came next door, and I was like 9 years old, turning 10 later that year. And they came next door and knocked on the door and said, yeah, our mom sent us over because we know Lawrence is a big Beatle fan. Here, we got a ticket for him if he wants to come with us and see the Beatles. Well, I'm like, I hit the ceiling, you know, and I'm like, yes, yes, I want to go. But my mom, who'd been reading too many things and too many conspiracy theories,
you wouldn't let you go?
She said, you know, I'm a wee bit worried about his ears, about the hearing. Because the girls are screaming. Oh. They're screaming so loud.
Wow.
They'll hurt your ears. So you know something? Next year, you'll be 10. You can go when you're 10 years old.
Oh, man. And
I was like, you know, I would remind my mom awfully often throughout the rest of her life, just how much I loved her, that she denied me to see the Beatles, and yet I loved her just as much.
Did you get to tell Ringo that story when you were recording your record? Did you tell Ringo that story?
Oh, I did not. No, I tried to, during that era, I tried to stay away from any Beatle chat.
Okay, that probably makes sense.
At that time, I think now if I ever got a chance ever to see him again, I think basically he's the biggest Beatle fan on planet Earth, I believe, at this point, only seconded by Paul McCartney. So that's,
I think I may have told this, James, in a story. I was in a recording a show somewhere. I forget what studios it were, but walking through the hallway, I did this with a few different people in my life. Ringo was coming towards me and I did this one. I did this. Hey, I got a head up. Now he gave me a head up back. That was as close as I came to a Beatle.
I think he'd really like that.
I wonder if he remembers. He's probably telling that story right now about me, you know? I mean, very possible. Yeah, I did it with Chris Hemsworth. I did it with Thor once too. I did that with Thor. What's up? How you doing?
Did he give it back? He doesn't
Thor see did. Thor. Well, with Thor, it was interesting because we were both, I'm 6'6", he's like 6'5" and change. Right? We're both, so we were in Sirius XM passing each other and we were at head and shoulders above everyone else and we were just kind of staring at each other. So he gave it right back to me. He had to. You know, it like, would have been weird if he didn't.
Ringo Stoper, because he sang Octopus's Garden, baby. Called it.
Yeah. I know. The first drug you ever did after weed, unless weed was not the first drug you ever did.
Yeah. No, the first drug I ever did, I'm going to quote my mom again. The first drug I ever did was alcohol, quite honestly. I drank, I got just about three beers down my throat when I was about 14 years old. Wow. But we have in America, you know, the cheese puffs, you know, we call them cheesies. You have cheesies.
Yeah, we have cheese puffs, right?
Like Cheetos, you know, I ate like a huge bag of those with it to try to cover the beer breath that I was going to go home with.
Oh.
Went home, spewed, like luckily we had a bathroom down the basement, spewed everywhere, these cheeses and everything. And my mom came, my mom's getting a lot of time on this show. My mom came downstairs and she said, "Lorenzo, you're all right." And I said, "Oh yeah, I'm fine." She goes, "What?" She goes, "What's wrong?" I said, "I ate too many cheesies." She goes, "That's funny because it smells like beer."
All right. And now the first time you had sex.
Yeah, as if I'm going to tell you that. But anyway.
Does that smell like beer too or cheesy? Whatever. We accept all the answers here, sir.
It smelled like cheesy beer, quite honestly. And it was the dog next door was humping the leg, and I enjoyed it a little bit too much, I think.
All right, fair enough. All right, so now
it's cold there in the winter.
The tour,
yeah, with, I was grateful for the warmth. Yes,
the tour with you guys, Styx, REO Speedwagon Lover Boy. The dates are everywhere, but you could go to Styx the Band on Instagram to get it. Crash of the Crown, which came out last year, number one in the rock charts. Kudos to you guys for that happening. Following you on Instagram at GOWAN. And honestly, dude, it was a pleasure to have you on. Anything else you want to plug before we go around the room with our plugs?
No, I maybe a few more plugs in my hair, but this tour has been so magnificent so far. I'm knocking on everything wood that it keeps going.
Is it fair to say that you've been loving every minute of it? All right, James, your turn. Go ahead.
You won this one, Ralph, out there. The James Mattern on Instagram and YouTube, and I have my the video's out, dog. The special, the check spot, me doing stand-up at the worst part of the comedy show where everyone pays their bills. It's in black and white. It's quasi-documentary. It's the best. James Mattern, the check spot, YouTube. Check it out, baby. And I'll be in Canada with Chrissy D, Montreal in July and Toronto in the fall, baby. Check it out.
You should use a picture. Take a screenshot of this and walk around with you and Lawrence together. You might get into some places. Shannon, your plugs.
You can.
Oh, there's Shannon.
Hi. You can follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts. We have all sorts of interesting guests come on, comedians, musicians, reality TV stars, and porn stars, and they tell their own personal accounts of a bad date they were on, a time they got into a street fight, and an experience with the paranormal.
Okay, now, Lawrence, do not give any indications. The last question of the show. Do not even bat your eyes. We try and guess. Does the guest believe in ghosts? Shannon, you chime in first.
Yes.
James, you?
Nah.
I'm going no as well. Lawrence, do you believe in ghosts?
I've never met one. So I'm going to say until I meet one, I'm going to hold out.
I'm back, baby.
I take that as a no, Shannon. That is a no.
I don't really feel like it's really a no.
If he hasn't met one, he doesn't know. Didn't you remember that line?
I've never met Elvis. That doesn't mean he doesn't exist.
I'm open-minded, and I'm open-minded enough to think that there are friendly spirits around that have helped me.
All right, so Shannon's back in.
I don't know about that. Shannon, there's that line in Ghostbusters. Hey, Ray, do you believe in Jesus? And Ray goes, Dan Aykroyd, Canadian, goes, I never met him. That was a no. And then
Ernie Banks.
I know. He said he believes there's spirits and stuff. Oh, so I'm allowing it.
This was a push. We're going to end the show with a goddamn push.
Follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. My other podcast on health and wellness is called The Good Sugar Podcast. Comes out every Monday. I am hosting Stone Temple Pilots, King's X, Steven Adler, and Geo 2, along with the School of Rock for the David Z Foundation. July 30th, it'll be at the Paramount Theater in Long Island. Come down, hang out with us. It's also a charity event as well. And dude, thank you so much for coming on. We add a song every week to the playlist. We're going to add the title track, Crash of the Crown, to the playlist, the sdrshow.com/playlist. And honestly, dude, just a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much.
Fun, man.
I really enjoyed it. Honest, guys. So thank you, Shannon. Thank you, Jamie. Thank you, Ralph. Lovely to meet you guys. And we'll see you somewhere up the road.
Listening to the SDR Show.